WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, pre-recorded Henry. Good morning. My name's Arthur, and it's the 9th of September, 2020. I have to continue from last week's show with the matter of the medium well done. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This will be episode 395. Can't read my handwriting here. With an original air date of the 16th of May, 1956.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Tony Ricardo.
Oh, I've been hoping to get in touch with you.
Did you receive my note?
Was that your polite threat to kill me if I don't leave Carol Sharp alone? Yeah, I received it. And I have a sneaking suspicion the police department might be interested in
it. No. Oh, please, I guess I acted a bit hastily. Perhaps you'll let me talk to you.
You want to take the threat back?
That still stands.
Then you don't leave me much choice.
Talk to me first. Believe me, you won't be sorry.
But I might be dead. Is that it?
I want to see you.
Can't do it now, but where can I reach you?
Sunrise 3, 9970.
Okay. Meantime, don't get trigger happy.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location New York City, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the matter of the medium. Well done. Expense account item 7, 85 cents. Cab fare from the Bell Towers to the 18th Precinct Station and Sergeant Randy Singer.
So, you met Carol Sharp, huh?
Yep. I put on an act that would have done credit to the Theater Guild. Told her she looked exactly like a girl I dreamed about as a kid, a girl named Carol.
Oh, Lord, she swallowed it?
Not only that, but she gave me a lecture on veridical dreams, an allied psychic phenomenon.
You deserve an Oscar.
Also, she wants me to go with her and see this Madame Morgana Morgana.
Oh, good, when?
Tomorrow night.
Well, you're not figuring on skipping tonight's seance, are you?
Oh, no, not a bit. I want to find out what this stuff is all about, so I'll be prepared for tomorrow. This dame you have lined up pretty good?
She's got a big following. You ready to go?
Oh, wait a minute. You said you had the file on Tony Ricardo.
Oh, yeah, yeah, here it is, waiting for you. There, Anthony Ricardo, alias Ricky Marino, alias Tony the Tip. Here's his picture. Height 5'9", weight 172, eyes brown, hair sparse gray, suspected member of the Dutchie Sperling outfit, 12 arrests, no conviction, started as a rum runner back...
Hey, this is Tony Ricardo?
It's the guy.
I would have sworn the man I talked to over the phone was in his 20s. Late 20s at most.
You talked to him?
After leaving an unpleasant little note under my door at the Towers, he called me on the phone.
And what kind of note?
Oh, nothing particular. Just a gentle suggestion I lay off Carol Sharp.
Threat, huh? Still got it?
But I'm sure that voice couldn't have come from this old geezer.
Yeah, well, frankly, I kind of wondered about the Sharp girl being interested in him, even though the file does show he's always surrounded himself with a bunch of young ones. You know, he's probably handed out more mink coats. Oh, Johnny, wait a minute. Old Tony's got a couple of kids. Here, Angela. Goes under the name of Angela Richards. At least she used that name at Bryn Mawr.
Bryn Mawr?
Yeah, and Sarah Lawrence College at Bronxville. Yeah, the old boy tried to keep the stigma of his past away from her, I guess. Yeah, you see, married to a doctor over in Hackensack. Respectable housewife.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what about the other?
Anthony Jr., age 26. That was last year. Let's see, that makes him 27. Now, Rutgers University, class... Not much on him. Unless I miss my guess, he's a chip off the old block. Now, you know where I can find him?
All I have is his phone number.
What is it?
Wait till I see and talk to him.
That may be too late. He's what I think he is.
Why not ask this medium about him tonight?
Yeah, that... Hey, come on, we're late. Let's go.
Item 8, $1.20, cab to an old brownstone house somewhere over in the West 40s, way west, in a district that had seen better days. We were greeted at the door by a tall, gray-haired old gentleman, dressed in black, except for his white gloves, that somehow reminded me of a pallbearer.
Come in, Mr. Singer and Mr. Dollar. Clarabel is about to begin. Psychometry is the mood this evening. Follow, please.
How do you know our names?
Oh, I had to give them to him when I made the appointment.
Now, what's this psychometry business?
You'll see.
Oh, wow. The music gives me the creeps.
Yeah, I...
Shh. Into the temple, please. And be seated.
The temple turned out to be an old dining room. Bare wooden floor, heavy drapes over the windows. And as nearly as I could see, a bunch of chairs around in a circle filled with people. The sockets in the ancient chandelier that hung from the ceiling had red bulbs in them that barely glowed. We could hardly see a thing, although I'm sure the light went up very slightly when we made our entrance and then down again, as though somebody was controlling it with a rheostat. Our eyes were almost used to the semi-darkness by the time we seated ourselves in the circle. Nobody spoke, and the weird music from that scratchy record was beginning to get on my nerves or put me to sleep or something. I'm not quite sure what. Then, suddenly, there was a flash of light and a puff of smoke, and so help me. What the... Randy!
Shh, quiet. This is all part of the act.
Shh.
Greetings,
friends of the unknown, friends of the mystics, of Botan the Indian boy, and the seventh son of the seventh son of Harishnu the mighty.
And there she stood, in the center of the circle where the flash had gone off.
Are we all in the mood?
She stood there draped in what looked, even in the dim light, what looked like a slightly soiled bedsheet, pulled in around her ample middle with a hunk of coarse rope. She wore a sort of turban, or maybe it was just an old dish towel wrapped around her head. A faint odor of gin pervaded the room. I guess her feet were bare, for she made no noise as she walked slowly around the circle, holding on a shallow metal tray. Taking a collection so soon, I wondered?
Each of you, place upon the tray some object very close to you, something you have had a long, long time that has become a part of you.
Huh?
Shh, you'll get it back.
And if the spirits are with us, and there are no dissenting minds among us, if Botan, the Indian boy from the world beyond, is willing to act as our control, we shall learn many strange things this night. Place something close to you upon the tray.
Will this watch be on?
You must not speak, but keep the mood. Keep the mood. Are we all in the mood?
Yes, sir. Yes, we are.
And now, dear friends, while I meditate and establish contact with the spirit world, Hemingway will pass among you for the tiny assurance that you join us in all sincerity. Now join hands to create the flux that will join our thoughts and minds and hearts and open the doors to enlightenment for all of us.
$5.
Botan, are you with us tonight?
$5, please.
Botan, will you answer
$5,
us?
$5,
are you with us now? Is that Botan that answers our call, or the little sister, Hyacinth? Ah, it is Botan. We may begin. I hold this ring. I feel the paramagnetic forces arising from it. This belongs to a businessman south of here. I seem to see clothing hanging in a large warehouse.
Yes, yes.
And the sound of many machines, sewing machines.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And many young girls working at the machines.
One by one, she picked the objects off the tray, held them in her hand, and gave a kind of character reading of the owners. Occasionally, somebody in the circle would respond in a way that made it sound like she'd guessed right. Other times, she'd just make with a lot of generalities that could apply to anyone. Finally, she picked up my watch.
This watch, I see tall buildings of stone and strange signs on them. I don't know what they mean. Tri-mutual universal adjustment.
Huh? Randy.
And I see great sheaves of papers carefully folded. And on each one it says, policy. Policy. I don't understand unless... Insurance, yes.
This is fantastic.
Wait till she gets to one I put there.
The watch is from a young man. Clever, energetic. I will have many things to tell him at another time. But he must see me again. Often. And now, this other object that lay beneath the watch. I see a police badge. The cops!
Oh, my God.
Dirty crooks, the cops are on to us. We're being raided. Slay him. Get him out of here. Hemingway! Hemingway!
Get out of here. Come on, Johnny. I may need a hand. Just a minute there, Clarabelle.
Take your filthy hands off me. Let me out of here.
You're not going anywhere until I have a talk with you.
Hemingway! Ditched me, ran out on me. I might have known he would at a pinch.
There isn't going to be a pinch if you'll just shut up and stand still a minute.
I wasn't doing no harm, honest officer, and all the money goes to charity.
All right, settle down. Where's the light switch? Got it, Randy.
I'll never live this down. Now look, officer.
You look, Clarabelle. All we want is some answers to some questions.
And you won't pinch me?
Not if you tell the truth. Johnny?
Yeah. Just how did you know so much about me? It certainly wasn't from holding that watch.
Okay, so it wasn't. Though some there are who can do it that way. That I've heard.
Well, go on.
No pinch?
No pinch.
Well, when your friend called to arrange your being here tonight, Hemingway... That bum, he would walk out on me.
Go on, would you?
Well, Hemingway asked where you come from, so we'd know if the spirits was propitious there. That's what we always said.
And I told him Hartford.
That's right. So what's Hartford? Insurance. If a client's in insurance, he responds like you done. So I keep pushing it. And if he ain't, well, at least he thinks I done pretty good by describing the place he comes from.
Yeah. What about the clothing maker right at the beginning?
Easy. He called from a hotel, so he calls the hotel back and gets his address.
You told him he was from the south of here.
Sure. Woodbine, New Jersey. Only business down there of any account is clothing and small farms.
Where'd you find that at?
State directory, any library. And anybody could see he was a businessman, not a farmer.
Well, I'll be.
And hooking him that way tonight, you could have had him coming back as long as he could afford it, huh?
Sure. And if it hadn't been for you, you double-crossing.
Okay. Now, what about the others?
Some we get the dope on and some we guess at. But there's always enough good ones to keep going.
So easy. And yet, I must confess she'd had me stop for a while. We talked with her a bit longer. Randy warned her to watch her step and we left. Took a taxi back to my hotel.
Well, did you learn anything?
I should hope to tell you. What do the church-going spiritualists think of her kind?
They hate them, and I don't blame them.
Hmm.
Are you still going to see Madame Morgana Morgana tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Well, mister, that one won't be so easy to expose, if you can expose her.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, the medium well done appears. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Okay, that was episode 3 of The Matter of the Medium. Well done, with Bob Bailey as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I'm going to have to break up this sequence because I edited together the last 2 episodes to eliminate some of the redundantness. This what I'm going to play next is The Unexpected, with an original air date of the 20th of June, 1948. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
From Hollywood, Barry Sullivan in The Unexpected.
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected. Life is filled with the unexpected. Romantic, tragic, and mysterious endings to our most ordinary actions. Dreams come true, or dreams are shattered by sudden twists of fate in The Unexpected. And now, Barry Sullivan, famous motion picture and stage star in Eavesdropper, a drama of The Unexpected.
Your name, senor?
Ray Madison. That spell was 2 D's.
Si, 2 D's. Address?
New York City, New York, USA.
Occupation?
Tourist.
I see. If you wish to make a confession, it may save us both time and trouble.
Yeah?
Si, senor.
Well, all right. What have I got to lose? You must know the whole story by now, anyway.
They will call a stenographer.
Make it a redhead.
The color of the hair does not matter, senor. Here in El Hondos, we utilize male stenographers. Pedro. Pedro, venga pronto. Now, Senor Madison, as you say in your native land, sing.
Okay, chum. This confession will include a full statement of my connection with the abortive revolution of Colonel Juan Dominguez. It will be long and detailed, but you ask for it. I came down to this hot, smelly little country 3 months ago, partly because things were too warm in New York and partly because El Hondos was advertised in the travel posters along Fifth Avenue as a land of opportunity. So for 90 days, I've eaten hot food, slept in hot hotels, tried to keep out of the hot sun, and serenaded a Latin woman. It's been very enervating, all that heat. But in spite of the natural attractions of your beautiful little republic, senor, I forced my mind into odious business matters. It's an old North American custom. All right, now let's get this straight, Juan.
Colonel Domingo, if you please, senor.
Oh, sure, I know how you feel. I was a sergeant once myself.
Very amusing.
Is it? I didn't think so at the time. But let's get down to business, Colonel. You want 79 machine guns, 2,000 rounds of...
Senor, please. It's a revolution, you know. You might be overheard.
Okay.
Now, I have prepared a list of the firearms we shall require. You will please memorize this paper and then destroy it. And in, shall we say, 3 weeks, my needs will be satisfied.
Maybe, if you don't need too much, and if the price is right. I'm the middleman in this deal, you know, senor, and I wouldn't like to be left in the middle.
You'll be well rewarded, amigo, when I assume the duties of government.
If you don't mind, Colonel, I'd like something in advance. You never can tell how an election will turn out.
In El Hondos, one can predict if one is well equipped.
Maybe, but I'd like 5,000 on account.
Very well, senor. When the arrangements are complete, you'll receive your money.
Dollars, Colonel, not pesos. Domingo pulled his chest up out of his stomach, clicked his heels, bowed, and strode off down the street. The cluster of beggars at the far end of the square gave him a wide berth. Colonel Domingo wasn't likely to be voted the most popular man in El Hondos unless he had a 105-millimeter howitzer pointed at the ballot box. But he had friends. He wanted to influence people, and what was most important to me, possessed a very full cash box. 3 weeks later, I had contacted some specialists in the homeland. I always buy American. They agreed to forward a shipment of thunder sticks to be carefully mislabeled canned peaches. I anticipated prompt arrival aboard the SS Night Rose, which was scheduled to drop anchor in a sheltered cove belonging to the current president's current girlfriend. The lady in question, Dolores, was already anticipating a political upheaval and spent her spare time practicing the gentle art of waxing mustaches. So I was ready for my $5,000. Colonel Domingo was ready for his guns. The president's girlfriend was ready for a change of administration. And El Hondos was more than ready for a grade one, class B revolution.
When is this, Senor Madison?
Colonel?
I trust I have not kept you waiting, amigo.
Hello, the pleasure was all mine. I've just been sitting here drinking my tequila and enjoying the view.
The pretty girls at the fountain with the jugs of water on their head, no?
Yeah, they had such extraordinary equilibrium.
Equilibrium?
Let it go. Now, let's get down to business, Colonel.
Shh. Not here, on the patio. There might be eavesdroppers.
Ah, there's nobody important around. This cafe is as empty as a burlesque theater after a raid.
Very well. But caution is the watchword. Remember.
I remember.
And I may as well tell you. If anything happens, the fact that you are an American citizen will afford no protection. The official police do not look for the passports until they are certain that a corpse is a corpse.
Yeah, but in any case, I'd like to think that the body had $5,000 just for funeral expenses. The high cost of dying, you know?
Please. Not joke, senor.
In my country, nobody jokes about $5,000.
When the arrangements are complete, you will have the money.
That's what I'm here to tell you. Everything's all set. The boat docks tomorrow evening. Here, I've got a telegram. Here. Here, read it.
But I do not understand.
Peaches are machine guns. Apricots, there are rifles. Candied yams are ammunition. And the hominy grits are TNT.
Oh, a course.
Yeah, you catch on quick.
Then tomorrow at midnight, we will move swiftly from Dolores' plantation to the capital, and the revolt will begin.
And there'll be $5,000 for me, if you please.
Very well. But, Senor Madison, you have a one-track mind. What was that? Look.
Huh? What?
Look, that beggar. He was sitting down there. He's running away.
So what?
But he heard us. Do you not understand? He heard everything.
Okay, okay. Don't get excited.
But he may go to the police. See, he's disappeared around the corner. If he should talk, I am ruined. My honor. Do you not realize what it means to lead an unsuccessful revolution? He's a personal disgrace.
Well, that's life.
Unless he is found and stops, our lives are in jeopardy, Senor Madison. That beggar must be prevented from reaching the government officials.
I'll take your word for
it. If he isn't captured, I cannot pay you the $5,000.
Well, for Pete's sakes, why didn't you say so in the first place? Stop worrying, Colonel. I'll find our eavesdropper, and the revolution can go off on schedule. Domingo waggled his mustache with deep concern, but I didn't wait to listen to him. I'd spotted the little beggar limping across the edge of the square, and I took after him like a sailor on his first shore leave. But I was too late. He'd already been swallowed up in the maze of narrow, twisting streets that fingered their way down toward the waterless Hondas River. That beggar had to be found and silenced. I value my neck as much as the next guy. And although I hadn't informed Colonel Domingo, I realized if that little brown stool pigeon ever reached the police, my life was worth about as much as a duck in a shooting gallery. You see, I know that some of these boys take their revolutions kind of serious. In fact, dead serious. So I went in search of my prey. Felipe Roxas, the clerk at the Hotel del Granada, said he knew everybody in El Hondas, and I figured he could be of some help. Yeah, he knew everybody in El Hondas.
Si, Senor Madison. I think the man you are looking for is Pedro Gonzalez. Si, it must be Pedro.
Pedro, thanks.
But it could also be Raul Martinez.
Martinez.
Or Fernando Garcia, or Roberto Hernandez, or Carlos Limon, or Francis.
Felipe was no help. By now, Colonel Domingo and his hopes for revolution had wilted perceptibly. I decided our only chance was for me to wander the streets and turn our little brown friend up before he turned us in. My meanderings led me into every bar, greasy spoon, flop house, and dance pavilion in the capital. I discovered a total of 17 beggars who limped, wore tan sombreros, had big ears and shifty eyes, but none exactly fitted the picture of the little man who overheard my conversation. And then number 18 did. It was just a few minutes ago when I spotted him. He was coming out of a large white building, his flat-nosed face wreathed in smiles and his sombrero cocked at a jaunty angle. I broke several records for the 100-yard dash as I crossed the street. He saw me, effected a miraculous cure for his limp, and spurted away like a frightened fawn. But I caught him.
What do you want, senor? Me no do wrong. What senor wants?
I took a stranglehold on the little guy's throat and was just applying leverage when a guy in uniform burst out of the entrance of the white building, flashing a large black old-fashioned revolver.
What is going on here, senor?
Not a thing, officer. Just doing my calisthenics. Finger exercises. Great for the muscle tone.
Senor, this is unforgivable. Do you not know where you are? This is the police station. Senor, it is no proper place to commit a murder.
And you were so right, officer. I relaxed my grip. No sense wasting energy on such a hot day. And besides, my victim had already squealed. He was coming out of the precinct station, not going in. I was the one that was going in, prodded by your large black revolver. As far as I was concerned, Colonel Dominguez's revolution was finished, and goodbye, $5,000.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait, fate takes a hand. Wait for the unexpected. And now for the surprising conclusion of Eavesdropper, starring Barry Sullivan. A Hamilton Whitney production written by Robert Libet and Frank Burt and directed by Frank K. Danzig.
Well, that's it.
Si, senor.
So ends the shortest revolution in the history of El Hondos. You boys will, of course, be able to collect the canned goods when the Night Rose docks tonight. And now I'd like to see the American consul.
Gracias. The Republic of El Hondos is indebted to you for this information.
Huh? Why me? That little eavesdropper must have given you the straight dope before this.
He told us nothing, senor.
Nothing? Then what was he doing in the police station?
His begging permit needed renewal, and Diego is always prompt.
You mean he didn't tell you about the revolution?
But no, senor. How could he? Hear nothing of your conversation with Colonel Dominga. You see, Diego is deaf. Totally deaf.
Eavesdropper starred Barry Sullivan. Listen soon for another of your favorite motion picture stars in a drama of The Unexpected.
That was The Unexpected, with an original air date of the 20th of June, 1948. For whatever reason, I thought that was out of Oklahoma City and not Hollywood. And the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio has Frank Burt credited with a writer on the series, and he penned my favorite radio drama, The Six Shooter. Well, enough of that. I got to go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that PSA. Okay, now I'm going to conclude the program with the remaining two episodes of The Matter of the Medium Well Done. Technically, these would be episodes 394 and 395, with air dates on the 17th and 18th of May, 1956. But in this quarter hour, dailies, it'd be episode 4 and 5. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Carol, Johnny.
Oh, hello, Carol.
I've made the arrangements for us to go to the seance tonight with Madame Morgana Morgana.
Good. What time?
8 o'clock. Only it's across the river in New Jersey.
Will you have dinner with me?
I'd love to. But we'd better make it pretty early.
Pick you up in your penthouse at 6?
I'll be waiting, Johnny.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location New York City, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the matter of the medium. Well done. Some pretty strong pressure was being put on Carol Sharp to change the beneficiaries of her $110,000 life policy. And she was very much under the influence of a psychic medium who insisted that she be named as one of the two new beneficiaries. The other was to be a Tony Ricardo, whose father made quite a record for himself in the bootlegging gangster days of the Roaring Twenties. I met him at Susan Palmer's Oyster Bar over in Radio City. I must admit I was surprised at the sort of fellow he turned out to be.
I guess it was a little, well, extreme to threaten you that way, Mr. Dollar.
That's putting it mildly.
But this whole spiritualism business and the hold it has on Carol, well, it has me terribly concerned.
You don't like spiritualism?
I didn't say that. You know, just as well as I do, there are a great many fine, honest spiritualists in the city. But as in any other field, there are frauds, racketeers.
So I've heard.
It's not only true of religions, but businesses, professions, anything, you know.
Sure, sure. But now look here, Tony.
Dollar, I will not have you or anyone else leading Carol on. This medium who's already has such a hold on her. Do you understand?
Pardon me, Tony. Your background is showing.
What?
I say come off it. This kind of act won't work.
What are you talking about?
Do you think I don't know you're one of the two Carol wants to name as beneficiaries of her policy? You and that medium?
That's not my doing.
Whose doing is it?
That medium, Morgana Morgana. She's been taking Carol's money by the hundreds week after week. Now you've come along to encourage her, and Dollar, I tell you to stop it.
Tony.
Maybe that story you gave her about dreaming of her over and over when you were a kid and couldn't even have known about it was true, but I don't believe it.
Tony, that was made up out of whole cloth.
I still... What?
This funny decision to switch your policy around is the case I'm assigned to.
Wait a minute, you mean that...
Yes. I had to meet her somehow, so I used that device, knowing she might fall for it because of her implicit belief in such things.
Yes, but now you're encouraging this whole thing. You're even going to see this Morgana Morgana with her tonight.
Because if she is a phony, it's the only way I can show this to Carol. Well?
I hope and pray that you can, Mr. Dollar. Some of the best psychic investigators in the country have been stumped by her. How are you going to go about it?
I won't know until I've seen her operate. Even then, I may not know. Or maybe this medium isn't a fraud.
Oh, come on, of course she is.
But you can't prove it.
But you or somebody must. Carol will change her policy and...
And then turn up dead.
Won't be easy, Mr. Dollar. I've attended these seances with Carol, many of them. There have been times when I've almost been convinced myself.
Waiter. Waiter, some more coffee, please.
No more for me, thanks.
You're going to need it, Tony, because I'm going to keep you here until you've told me every detail you can remember of this Madame Morgana Morgana's seance procedure.
All right, I'll help you all I can.
You'd better. I'm still not forgetting that if I fall down on this job, you'll cut into Carol's insurance for a neat $30,000, in spite of your sweet talk. I'll say this for Tony Ricardo. He was thorough, and I began to believe that he was serious in his concern for Carol. Item 12, 10 cents, one-fold call to Tommy Green.
No, Johnny, no trouble at all in getting the rundown on Carol's family that you asked for.
Keep talking.
Apparently they're doing all right there in Mauchunk, PA. Neither the mother or two brothers will ever have to really get out and dig for a living.
Their old man left them well set up, huh?
Yeah. One of the boys, Harold, turned out pretty well. Works in some office over there, even though he doesn't really need to.
What about the other boy?
That'll be Dave, the black sheep of the family. Travels with a fast crowd, tears around the country in a sports car, that sort of thing.
Oh.
Right now, he's somewhere here in New York, just playing around. But, Johnny, are you getting anywhere on this case?
Yeah, Tommy, I think I am. Especially after what you just told me.
Huh?
Item 13, another phone call, this time to Sergeant Randy Singer at 18th Precinct Headquarters.
Yeah, Johnny?
Got a real easy one for you.
What's that?
Find a man. Name is David Sharp. Home address, Mauchunk, Pennsylvania.
Chunk, Pennsylvania. Got it.
Description?
None, though he's probably in his 20s.
Well, that's not enough.
And he's probably staying at a hotel here in the city.
Well, yeah, but where? What part of the city?
Let me know when you find out, will you?
Yeah, now, wait a minute, Kate.
Expense account item 14, $106.80, and it includes cabs to several camera shops. One miniature camera with an F2 lens, a couple of rolls of special film, some very special flash bulbs, and a tiny flash holder. Item 15, taxi back to the towers to clean up and dress for my date with Carol. Then the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
We located David Sharp for you, Johnny. Just dumb luck.
Now, who knows, Randy? Maybe you're psychic.
Nah, leave us not have that stuff.
Where is he?
Found him staying at the third hotel we called, the Aberan over on East 53rd Street. Not two blocks from that palatial joint where you're staying.
Is he there now?
No, but he always comes in just before dinner time. Hey, you still haven't told me why you're interested in him.
I'm not sure myself. But do me a favor, will you?
Like what?
When he shows up, put a tail on him. I want to know where he goes, how long he stays, and when he comes back.
But you won't say why?
Not until I'm sure I know why. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, but I haven't said
Thanks, boy. Dinner with Carol could have been one of the pleasantest things in years. But I'm afraid I was preoccupied with matters at hand and she with anticipation.
She's promised to try to hear from Daddy again tonight. Oh, Johnny, I so want to speak to him again.
Finally, I signed the check. We hopped into a taxi and headed across the river to the Jersey side. We ended up at a rather plain but nice home somewhere on the outskirts of, I guess it's Union City. We were met at the door by a matron of about 45, I should say, who looked like an ordinary, respectable housewife, except perhaps for her quick, discerning eyes.
Good evening, Carol, my dear. Oh, and you must be Mr. Johnny Dollar.
Yes, Madam Morgana Morgana?
Yes. Do come in and meet the others who are here to form the circle tonight.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Carol told me nothing about you except your veridical dreams of her. An amazing experience, isn't it? Perhaps you're really psychic.
Oh, I doubt that. But all our friends thought my kid brother Richard was before he died a couple of years ago.
Richard. Richard. That name has been haunting me ever since Carol telephoned. You don't suppose...
What, madame?
Oh, no, of course not. Now, here in the parlor are the others who will be with us tonight. May I present Mr. Johnny Dollar, Mrs. Dorothy Jessup.
How do you do?
Mr. John Price.
Hello.
Mr. Samuel Froelich.
All right.
And, of course, you all know Carol Sharp.
Good evening.
I see no reason why we shouldn't start. The atmosphere has seemed almost electric tonight. Very conducive to good contact with the, shall we say, the netherworld. And... Oh, yes, you may smoke if you like, Mr. Dollar. We're very informal.
Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry. Just sort of a nervous habit, I guess, flicking this lighter.
Oh, incidentally, I hope you'll tell these people of your dreams after we're finished. Oh, dear. The atmosphere is tense. We should begin right away. Well, yes, I'll turn on some low music.
The six of us sat down in a small circle. On the floor were three long, slender metal trumpets, like Halloween horns, but made of thin metal, spaced about the center of the circle. In the subdued conversation of the next few minutes, I learned it was through these that the spirit voices would come to us, that they would rise in the air and the voices would issue from them. From time to time, there in the pitch-black room, I snapped the cap of my lighter as a reminder of what it was.
You mustn't light it, Johnny, you know.
No danger. This one hasn't even got a flint in it.
I do hope we get some messages today.
I think we will, Mr. Froelich. I have a feeling that we will.
I have that feeling, too. Very strongly.
From what Madame told us, you must have definite psychic powers, Mr. Dollar. That should be helpful.
Wait. The power's here. I feel it.
Almost as though she were suffering
Come
physical
to us.
Pain.
We are ready.
The medium sighed and gasped. And we waited and waited. It's hard to describe the tension that comes of waiting that way in a completely darkened room. And it's easy to see how well the imagination can work, the powers of suggestion. There was a slight sound.
One of the trumpets. I heard it move.
Yes. Yes, so did I. That means that they are with us. It seemed to move toward you, Carol.
I hope so. Yes. Yes, I can feel it in the air near me. Father? Father?
Carol.
Father, can you speak to me? There's so many things I wish to ask you.
Yes, dear. Yes. Yes.
It may not sound like much to tell, but believe me, this was impressive. The death-like silence broken only by the faint voice from the trumpet, the whispered questions by Carol, an occasional sigh from the medium, and the shutter of my special little camera, which I hope sounded enough like my lighter had sounded.
Yes, Carol. Always do the things I tell you to. You are a good girl, my darling. And you give me great happiness in this lonely... in this...
Father? Father?
Goodbye, my... goodbye.
Oh, Johnny, do you see? Do you see? Because only he and I know the things we talked about. I feel the trumpet is still near us, and
John,
perhaps...
John.
Mr. Dahl, it's for you.
Yes? Richard?
Yes, John.
Dick.
I've waited so long to speak to you.
Dick. My brother. The brief conversation I carried on with my dead brother Richard was amazing. Of things in my childhood that I thought nobody else even knew about. Personal, intimate things that could only be known to a brother or someone equally close. It was fantastic, amazing, awe-inspiring. Except for one thing. I never had a brother. I didn't tell this to anyone. I played it straight and even stayed around and discussed my trumped-up dreams after the seance. But I needed proof, and I couldn't wait to get back to New York to the police lab where I could develop the infrared film in my little camera.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, the wind-up, and a bit of heartbreak for a very chastened girl. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Good morning, Johnny. This is Carol.
Oh, hi, Carol. Sleep well?
Johnny, you were so quiet on the way back from the seance last night. I hope it's because Madame Morgana Morgana convinced you of her powers as a medium.
How much did you pay her for that seance, Carol?
$100.
$100? Want to meet me in the coffee shop downstairs for breakfast?
I'd love to. 15 minutes?
15 minutes. Goodbye.
Oh, and weren't you thrilled to hear the voice of your dead brother again?
Yeah. Bye. Except that I never had a brother.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly... Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location New York City, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an accounting of expenses during my investigation of the matter of the medium. Well done. Expense account, item 18, 10 cents, phone call to Carol Sharp. Item 19, 10 cents, phone call to Sergeant Randy Singer.
Hey, I thought you were coming down here to headquarters this a.m. It's nearly 10 o'clock.
Soon as I've had some breakfast, your lab get those films developed for me?
They're working on them right now.
And did you put a tail on David Sharp?
Carol's brother? Yeah. I suppose you know he was over there in the neighborhood of that seance over in Jersey last night.
I would have bet on it.
Didn't you see him there?
No.
Well, that's funny.
Just keep that tail on him. See you later. Item 20, 1070, long-distance call to the city editor of the Mauch Chunk, Pennsylvania Herald-Express. For a full half hour, I asked him questions about the Sharp family, about one member of the family in particular. Then, item 21, 585, breakfast for Carol and myself in the coffee shop at the Swank Bell Towers.
You must have been impressed, Johnny. You're so quiet. Would you like to see Madame Morgana Morgana again tonight? Johnny?
Carol, I think we'll see her today.
Oh, but she couldn't. She always says it takes a full day to recover from the shock and strain of a seance. She goes into a deep trance, you know, in order to make the spirits move those little trumpets about and speak through them.
Listen, Carol.
Yes?
You have a brother, David.
Oh, David.
Why do you say it that way?
He's not really a brother. He was just sort of taken in by Mother when his parents died. I'd rather not speak of him, Johnny.
The black sheep of the family, huh?
Mother insisted on taking care of him. He was only 12 or 13. I've forgotten. Father didn't want to, but he permitted it.
Why didn't he want to?
Because David's father had been a criminal, and his father before him. Even David's mother was... And my father was afraid.
Yeah, that blood would tell.
Yes.
Your father left money to him, along with the rest of you.
Yes, he did. But not as much. And David has resented that. But no matter how much he had, he wouldn't have enough. His sports cars, the fast company. Johnny, how did you know about
that? Listen, Carol, I'm an insurance investigator.
What?
I came down here to look into this matter of your wanting to change the beneficiaries of your policy to cut off your mother and brothers in favor of this medium and Tony Ricardo.
Johnny, I hate you for this. Why didn't you...
I didn't dare let you know until I found out a few things.
This is the most...
And I think I have. Including the fact that Madame Morgana Morgana, who persuaded you to make the change, is nothing but a clever fraud.
No, that isn't true.
And I'll prove it to you, if you'll call your boyfriend, Tony Ricardo.
Tony?
Take him down to the 18th Precinct Police Station, where I'll be waiting for you.
But Tony hasn't. You think because his father was a kind of gangster years
ago... In Tony's case, I hope blood won't tell. 18th Precinct, both of you.
All right, Johnny, we will be there.
Johnny, a picture took last night.
Oh, thanks, Randy.
Hey, why'd you ever get the idea of using infrared light and infrared film?
Anything else, anything that let them know I was taking pictures would have busted up the seance. Hey, look at this one.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to publish those. Scare a lot of those phony psychics out of business and out of town.
Oh, here's the one that I...
Oh, Mr. Dollar, we're here.
Hi, Dollar.
Oh, hello, Tony. Miss Sharp, Mr. Ricardo, this is Sergeant Singer.
How do you do?
Hi.
And now, will you please show us this proof you were talking about?
Yes, Dollar. How did you make out, huh?
Made out very well, Tony, thanks to a miniature flash camera I had tucked into my pocket last night. I guess you wonder, too, how Madame Morgana Morgana worked her racket.
He did not. Tony knows as well as I do that she's completely honest. Like any normal person, he may have questioned the almost miraculous powers of this woman in the beginning. But no trumped-up tricks that you... Where did you get this picture?
And look at this one.
She's moving that trumpet herself. With the long kind of extended handles.
Extension grip, they call it. She probably hid it in the front of her dress.
Oh, no.
But these pictures in that dark room... Infrared photography.
Maybe she did use one trick. But the voices came from trumpets floating about in the air above our heads.
Then look at this one. Taken when your father was supposed to be speaking to you.
Oh, no. That little trumpet has a long tube on it.
Yep. Extending into that curtain doorway at the end of the room where somebody could whisper through it.
Oh, this is terrible. And the hundreds, the thousands of dollars I gave her, believing in her.
Yep. I'm afraid you were really took... Here's where my dead brother, Richard, spoke to me.
The hanging trumpet is over your head.
Yep.
But how could she know? I didn't tell her. Oh, yes, you mentioned your brother.
A completely non-existent brother, Carol.
Oh.
Made up. Like the dream of you I told you about.
And I believed you, too. But how could she find out all those things about me?
Miss Sharp, a couple of nights ago, I took Mr. Dollar to a medium that was a bum compared to this one. She told him all about himself.
Have you forgotten what I found out about you and your brothers just in the last 24 hours?
Oh, I don't know what to say.
Don't try. We've still got to pin this whole thing down. I'm sure this Madame Morgana Morgana wasn't working alone.
But who could be...
How about it, Tony?
No. No, not Tony. Just because his father was... Oh, no, please.
Oh, thanks, darling. I got a report here, Johnny. Apparently he's moved again. And you guessed right.
Yeah. Then we better get going. Can we use a prowl car?
No, but we can get an escort as far as the city line.
Then come on, all of you. cabbie, with his accelerator on the floor, had a ball trailing our escort across town. And we had to hold him down when we finally reached the Jersey side. Randy Singer obviously had no authority over there, but as it turned out, I'm glad he came. When we pulled up to the home of Meta Morgana Morgana, I couldn't help noticing a Studebaker Golden Hawk sticking out from behind the house with a Pennsylvania license. I wasn't the only one to notice.
Johnny, that looks like David's car.
I think it is. Come on.
Johnny, I'm out of my jurisdiction.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you better wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Johnny, I knew David was bad, but... Oh, I still can't believe it.
I know how you feel, Carol, and I'm sorry.
Mr. Dollar.
Wait a minute.
Johnny. Johnny, if you do a thing like this...
I'm ready for anything, Carol.
Look, Mr. Dollar, why not just you and I go in? If anything happened to Carol, I'd never...
Oh, Carol, dear. And Mr. Ricardo and Mr. Dolly.
Hello, Madame Morgana.
Do you mind if we come in?
Why, no. But not for another meeting, of course. The strain of last night's convocation is still with me, I'm afraid.
Yeah, maybe you ought to up the price for your next seance. But there ain't going to be no more.
Mr. Dollar, I don't understand.
Come on, Carol, Tony. We're going to look over that seance room in broad daylight.
No, you can't. I won't let you destroy the sanctity of that room.
Oh, yes, you will. I'll lay it on the line to you, madam, whatever your name really is. This monkey business of yours has gone far enough. So this is the room.
What terrible things you're saying.
You take a thing like spiritualism that a lot of honest people believe in and make a dirty racket out of it.
Carol, this man is mad. Make him leave this sacred place at once. Carol, what right have you to make such horrible implications?
Implications? Those were accusations. Would you like to see how those spirits of yours move trumpets around in the dark?
They couldn't be seen.
And how those spirit voices suddenly appear out of thin air? Look at these pictures.
How did you get these?
I cannot tell a lie. I did it with my little camera. Well?
All right. All right, you've exposed me. But there was nothing malicious about it. If you knew the solace, the comfort of mind and spirit these things have brought to the people who come to me.
At $100 a crack, sometimes more.
Why not? Carol has money. So have the others who come to me.
Did you plan to make them all turn their insurance policies over to you? And then contrive to have them suddenly and unexpectedly join their immortal ancestors in the great beyond?
No, no, that wasn't my idea. Oh, I knew something like this might happen.
It has happened. Now, where is he?
He's... No. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Your assistant, or colleague in crime would be a better word, who stood inside the curtained door of the seance room and made with the phony voices of the dead, who gave you all the information on Carol, who's probably done a nice little research job on me since my visit last night.
Yes, Mr. Dollar.
David.
I know all about your activity as an insurance investigator and why you're here. But it's not going to do you any good.
Oh, put that thing down and give yourself up, David.
So you're the one who arranged for me to be a beneficiary of Carol's policy, huh?
Stand back.
So the suspicion would fall on me when something happened to her?
Of course. And give us a chance to clear out. But now it's too late. And now that you've found us out. Well?
David, no. The light, somebody turned
off. Look out, Della! Look out!
You dirty... Pull a gun on me, will you?
Easy, easy, Johnny.
Control yourself. I'll knock you... Randy.
If you'll just get up off my chair.
Here, the lights. But David...
When I flicked off the lights, Tony here made a dive for him. Here he is, wrapped up in the corner there.
Yeah, I've got his gun.
Ooh, you got a mean left there, Johnny.
Oh, I'm sorry, Randy, but... See, I thought this was out of your jurisdiction.
I get curious about comparing your lousy photography with the room itself, Johnny, so I sneaked in the back door. When I saw what was going on, I lost my head, I guess. All right, Dave, up on your feet.
Oh, Johnny.
Easy, Carol. Better get her out of here, Tony.
Yeah, sure.
And remember that crack about blood will tell? Well, I think you can prove to her that in your case, at least, whoever said it was all wet. Well, what happens to David Sharp and Madame Morgana Morgana will be up to the courts. It's a cinch she's out of the ghost racket for a while. A long while. And of course, Carol did make a change in her policy to cut off David. Expense account, item 20-something, cab back to New York, hotel bill, and fare back to Hartford, $417.35. Expense account total, $892.90. Oh, and if you don't mind, I'll hang on to that tricky little camera and stuff in case I run into another medium well done. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Next week, the Tears of Night matter. A fabulous necklace and a fabulous girl. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote this week's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Lawrence Dobkin, Lorene Tuttle, Harry Bartell, Eleanor Audley, Joseph Kearns, Herb Vigran, Junius Matthews, Tony Barrett, and Sam Edwards. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That was yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The Matter of the Medium, well done. That was Act 4 and 5, aired on the 17th and 18th of May, 1956, from the quarter hour dailies that they ran then. My name's Arthur. You've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Thanks for listening. And this show has been previously recorded. Stay tuned for the Worst Boys Guild with CR coming up next.